I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Truss, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
This is where we look at why what's on the charts is on the charts. Ariana Grande is on the charts this week.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of talk about Miss Grande this week. Really, all things Ariana going to be the main focus of this podcast. Obviously, I assume if you are hearing this, you follow the charts, you follow what's happening. You probably have heard by now Ariana Grande numbers 1, 2, and 3 on the Billboard Hot 100 this week, and number one album on the Billboard 200. So really the Grande takeover that many of her fans, you know, they've been waiting patiently for that first number one hit for a long time. And now, I mean, she's just racking up hits after hit after hit after hit, and all at the same time. So we're going to talk about that history-making feat. Plus, we're also going to talk to one of the co-writers on both number one hits from this album, Seven Rings and title track Thank You Next, Nyomza, a songwriter and rising artist in her own right. So she's going to tell us the backstory of what happened with Seven Rings and what the vibe was like writing with Ariana and many of her pals, turning a Sound of Music theme into a number one hit. So we'll have that coming up. And we're actually going to, believe it or not, we'll talk about a few things that are not Ariana Grande as well. So if she's not quite your cup of tea, we'll have some content for you as well.
All right, let's kick off with this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. If you like Ariana, if you like Halsey as well, this top 10's for you.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
She used to meet me on the east side.
Number 9.
It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow. 100 bands in my pocket, it's on me. Yeah, your grandma more probably know me. Get more bottles, these bottles are lonely. It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow.
Number 8.
All tied up, no more love. And I'd hate to see you waiting. Had to have high hopes for a living. Shooting for the stars, but I couldn't make a killing. Didn't ever die, but I always had a vision. Always had high hopes.
Number 7.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gone on you with the pick and roll. Young and flame, he in sicko mode.
Number 6.
I want to raise your spirits. I want to see you smile. No, that means I'll have to leave.
Number 5.
Then you're left in the dust. Unless I stuck by you. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much, or you'd be left in the dark.
Number 4.
So you could take advantage of me. Tell me how's it feel sitting up there, feeling so high, but too far away to hold me. You know I'm the one who put you up there. Deep in the sky, does it ever get lonely? Thinking you could live. Without me, thinking you could live.
Number 3.
Thank you. Next, thank you.
number two. Number one.
Three, two, one. That is Ariana Grande in every one of those spots. A trifecta, a Neapolitan, a triple scoop, a hat trick, whatever you want to call it. She did it. Top three spots on the Hot 100. You guys just heard them. We'll back them up for you. Number three, Thank You Next, the title track of the massive album that's number one this week on the Billboard 200, was number one for 7 weeks previously at the end of last year, into the top of this year. Number two, brand new track, debut, Break Up With Your Girlfriend, I'm Bored. Already probably very much in the running for best song title of 2019. And number one for a fourth week, it is the track Seven Rings. So huge week for her to have the top three spots on the Billboard Hot 100. If you're thinking that sounds like some unprecedented territory, yeah, you're kind of right. There's been no solo artist to ever have the top three spots at once on the Hot 100, and only one act has done it overall. Yes, of course, if you know anything about chart history, your first guess is probably the right guess. It was indeed the Beatles back in their 1964 heyday.
So, 55 years ago for 5 weeks in 1964, the Beatles, right at the start of Beatlemania in March and April 1964, they had the top three for 5 weeks, including 1 week where they had the entire top five. Only time that's ever happened, on April 4th, 1964. But let's go back to April 25th, 1964. That was the last time until this week that we had the top three by one act. This is what the top three sounded like.
You'll never know how much I really love you. You'll never know how much I really care. Listen, do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell?
Three from the Beatles back in 1964, April 25th, the last time that one act had the entire top three. At number three, Do You Want to Know a Secret? Number two, Twist and Shout. And number one, Can't Buy Me Love. I like how Can't Buy Me Love and Seven Rings, they're both about materialism.
Is that the through line we found?
Well,
just those two songs about materialism. I'm sure Madonna is somewhere, you know, seething at you right now.
How about Diamonds? Here's the Beatles singing about diamonds.
No, no, no. Satisfied.
2019 version, Ariana.
Wearing no ring, but ain't gonna meet no misses. But matching diamonds for six of my boots. I'd rather spoil all my friends with my
inches. Yeah. kills me.
It almost feels like in some ways that the achievement is this week. She's numbers one, two, and three this week. But it almost feels like it's such a culmination of what's been happening for the last few months since November. It almost feels like it's kind of been leading up to this, with all the anticipation of the album and one single after another and how big these videos are. It just kind of feels like, it's not that, as much as this hasn't happened in 55 years, it's in some ways not that surprising that it happened this week.
Well, and what an interesting, for me, I think one of the interesting things about this is the flip of the recent narrative that we've seen. One of the things that I think that Ariana Grande does that shifts away from what Taylor, what Drake, what Bieber, what Beyonce, what a lot of them did, is the accessibility. I mean, Ariana's on Twitter every day talking with everybody, retweeting, sharing videos. You know, this narrative of sort of, you know, step back and sort of become this, I don't know, mystery figure, or don't give a lot of interviews, don't engage, you know, don't be around. And that seemed to be what drove success, is this, you know, sort of untouchability and sort of mystique about you. And, you know, it's all about the music. And so when you come out, it's, oh, you know, Drake's, you know, this is the statement. The music is the statement. And for Ariana Grande, I think that's really cool that she can engage and, you know, talk to her fans every day directly and sort of flip what people have sort of assumed superstars need to do on its head.
You can't fake that, too. It has to be something that you just feel. You could try to fake it. I don't think it would connect. I think this is just, this is who she is.
Well, I think it definitely, yeah. I mean, rallies the fan base, especially, like, you know, they know that she's watching. They want to do all these great things for her. She celebrates right there with them. And she's always talking about, you know, when something happens, love you guys so much. Thank you for making this happen for me, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that, you know, that definitely creates this cyclical effect that really gets people going for when these albums come out, when these songs are out, in a way that, you know, really hadn't been maybe the same case in the past couple of years.
So no surprise, the album also debuts at number one on the Billboard 200. Seemed like it wasn't that long ago. We were just talking about Sweetener being number one. So yeah, it's pretty rare for an artist to follow up with a number one album that quickly. I know we saw Future have back-to-back number one albums not that long ago, but again, for a pop artist, Ariana, really just doing what she wants.
All right, speaking of somebody else who has multiple hits under her belt at this very moment, let's talk about Halsey. So obviously the song Without Me was a number one hit on the Hot 100, still number one on the pop songs radio chart. Jump down to number two, and hey, it's Halsey once again, this time with Benny Blanco and Khalid on the song East Side, getting to number two after quite a long ride up the chart, Gary.
Yeah, 30 weeks to number two. That's a record climb to number two. And just kind of thinking, in almost any other week, that this might be a really huge headline that Halsey has the two top songs at pop radio. Ariana, I guess, maybe kind of overshadows things a little bit this week.
Yeah, she kind of just really like eclipses the whole chart this week. And speaking of sort of artists to double up at the top spot, Ariana, top three, had to go all the way back to the Beatles to find somebody else. Halsey's top two, you don't have to go quite that far. Jump back to 2014. We'll see. Iggy Azalea was the last person to have number one and number two on pop songs at the same time. Those songs, of course, were Fancy with Charlie XCX and her feature on, of course, Ariana Grande. There she is again. The song Problem. So 2014, Iggy Azalea.
And Ariana.
And once again, Ariana's impact up there.
All right. I think we can actually talk about ours. We might not bring up Ariana talking about this. Just going over to country.
For the record, we're not anti-Ariana, you know? I guess it's when we almost sound kind of like, I guess we have to talk about her. For the record, we love AG.
Yeah, country. Big week on country. Kacey Musgraves with the Album of the Year win at the Grammy Awards for Golden Hour. That album is back at number one on Top Country Albums, back in the top 10 on the Billboard 200 overall as well. And a single Rainbow from it hits the country airplay charts top 40 pretty quickly. So it's doing well at AC radio as well. So Kacey's only had one country airplay top 10 so far. It was back in 2013 with Merry Go Round. So we'll see if this is the song that brings her back to high ranks on the country airplay chart. There's also interesting stuff going on at country. The king of country, George Strait, he's back. Number 20, he debuts on country airplay with this song.
Monday morning, it's a given. I'll be D-R-A-G-N dragon. And that's what happens in every little honky-tonk bar.
So in at number 20, George Strait. It's his second highest debut ever of his record 99 songs he's had on country airplay. Only I Saw God Today started one notch higher, number 19, back in 2008. You're not the biggest country fan, Trevor, but I feel like this is one of George Strait's best songs. And I'm saying that after only having heard it one or two times. It's brand new. I'm comfortable saying I think this is one of his best songs ever.
I'll tell you what. I don't care what it is. All My Exes, that's the song. That is that song. GTA San Andreas, I used to like drive around. When that song came on the radio, that would be just... That's just 3 minutes of heaven.
So that wasn't, if you're in Texas, it's not, oh God, we can't listen to this. This is too cheesy.
No, I think, I mean, because you know, it's kind of fun. Like he shots at the little towns, you know, it's like I grew up like 20 miles from Galveston. So it's like, hey, Galveston, you know. So So always have a soft spot in my heart for all my exes live in Texas.
Yeah.
So, have you ever had that where there's an artist you've liked for years, maybe 20 years or so, and they put something new out and it's always, does their new material match up well against their old stuff? And sometimes you hear a song and instantly or quickly, you think, yeah, this actually is one of their best songs. You sort of think, well, how can that be? Because I haven't had time to really process it. But I'm on the side of song's a song, no matter when it came out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe we attach a sort of reverence for heyday and, you know, for hit-making status as indicators of what's best. And I think a lot of artists, you know, I don't think they would still be in the game if they didn't think they had something to offer, something to prove. And yeah, I mean, I can think of some artists, you know, who just laid in their catalog. I mean, there's some Patti LaBelle, some Whitney Houston songs that, I, you know, weren't massive chart hits. I don't know if they even necessarily charted at all, but just in terms of everything from, you know, the writers that they had, the production, and of course the vocal performances are still, you know, top notch. So
yeah,
I think it's a little, you know, easy to dismiss something that maybe isn't a hit. You know, they're just, you know, they're past their prime as not good. I don't think those things line up at all.
Yeah, unless you're Elton John or somebody with that kind of hit making longevity. Most acts, they might have that one window where they really had big hits, but for a lot of acts I know, they still really hit a lot of creative highs long after that big moment in the spotlight.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that really has to do with not trying to recreate what made you a hit maker in the first place. I think that's where a lot of people fall into the pitfalls of, oh, well, they just, you know, tried to, you know, rinse off this old hit and, you know, make it sound like it's something new. But it's really when they stick to their tried and true, which I know in a way almost sounds contradictory, but when you don't, maybe when you try to make that hit, that like chases it away even further.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the song. You can, I've seen cases where an act works with a new producer, tries to be a little more of the moment. Sometimes that works. Sometimes you're better off just sticking with what you do. I think it really comes down to how good the song is.
All right. And speaking of some old vintage material you're going to turn into a new hit, we're going to jump over to our special guest for the week, Neomza, who was a co-writer on the number one song on the Hot 100 this week, Seven Rings, which, as mentioned, really borrows a lot of the structure of My Favorite Things from The Sound of Music, flips that on its head. Also, Neomza, co-writer of the number three song this week, Thank You Next, both from Ariana Grande's album of the same name. So she really has a big share in Ariana's historic week. Also, for those who are big on Easter eggs or hidden clues, you may have caught her in the Seven Rings video as well. And dare I say, she may be one of the recipients of these magic seven rings. So we're going to find out all about how these songs were written and what it was like to craft two number one hits with the biggest pop star of the moment. So we are going to find out all about that.
All right. Along with Neomza's co-writing credits, her new EP Vacation is out now. Her U.S. headline tour is starting. She's playing Governor's Ball in New York as well later this year. She was discovered, too, by Mac Miller, just from a cover on YouTube. He signed her from that to his Remember Music label before she wound up now on Motown. So we're going to talk to her about the closeness she had to Mac Miller as well. It's all coming up. Neomza, our special guest here on the Billboard Sharpie podcast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I could make it right.
Holmes, welcome to the Billboard Sharpie podcast.
Hi.
So I was reading different things online, first of all, about your name, because it's such a beautiful, unique name. Does it translate to fresh, or is it youth, or is it both?
It's kind of a little bit of all of those things. It's really like the fresh bud of a flower, like right before it blooms. So it does mean like something new, something youthful, the fresh.
And you said you like to keep your music fresh. It's sort of a hallmark of your sound, is that you don't like to be pegged down to just one sound. So I guess it's pretty fitting for your name as well.
Yeah, it's definitely really fitting. I definitely like to just create whatever I'm feeling in the moment. So yeah, I try to keep it pretty current to my own personal life.
I guess one thing I got to ask you early on, because we started with one artist, then a second artist, but now it really feels like a trend. So your Albanian background. So Dua Lipa, Bebe Rexha, Ava Max is just having her first hit with Sweet But Psycho now, and you're now breaking through even further. So is this just a coincidence that Albanian singer-songwriters are doing so well here in the U.S., or what do you think is behind that, if anything?
I think if there's something that is driving it, it's definitely like the ambition that we have as a nation. You know, Kosovo and Albania, we've been through a lot over the years. You know, there was a war in Kosovo between Kosovo and Serbia, and my parents actually fled that war. So
right.
I think it's just the drive to create a better life for yourself and express yourself as an Albanian woman. So yeah, I definitely think it's just, the ambition just pouring out of our veins.
Not that you grew up there, right? You moved to the U.S. when you were really young, but that was instilled by your parents. It's a great trait to have.
Oh, yeah. I did grow up here. I moved here when I was like 4 or 5 years old. So, but I went back to Albania. I mean, Kosovo specifically. I went back to Kosovo every other year for like 3 months at a time. So a lot of my growing up and a lot of my childhood was definitely spent there as well. So it's a huge part of me. There's so much history there, you know, that you can just see with your own eyes if you go visit. I think it's a country that's progressing. You know, we, like I said, there was a war not too long ago. So we've just been coming up out of that. But I think the country is doing a lot better overall. And there's so much amazing art coming out of there right now. Not only with like artists that are doing well out here, but they have a really great community of artists out there as well.
So how did performing, you know, come into your life? I read that you started at a very young age. You were probably maybe 4 or 5. What gave you that bug to start writing and singing?
It's so weird. I feel like it was always just a part of me. When I was a kid, in like kindergarten and first grade, I used to literally imagine myself performing for my classmates. And I started writing my first songs when I was 8 years old. I would sit by the radio and like write down the lyrics, because this is before we all had access on our phones and everything. So I would just write down lyrics, and then I studied the structure of them. I saw that there would be a verse and then a pre and then like 4 line for a hook. And so literally that was like fun to me at this age. Like when I was 8 years old, I was like, this is exciting and I want to do this. And I remember just having a notebook and writing songs in there. And ever since then, it was just a really, really big passion of mine. I started putting out original songs and performing locally by the time I was 13.
So to give our listeners like a little sort of temporal guideline, when you were 8 years old listening to the radio, what songs were on? Who were some of the people that you were writing the lyrics down to?
Oh my God. So I was like obsessed with Christina Aguilera. I got the Stripped album. I like begged my mom for it. I really wanted that album. So I remember I bought that CD, studied those lyrics. That one actually came with like the lyrics in the CD when you opened it up and stuff, with all the pictures and stuff. Alicia Keys is huge part of that. You know, I love Destiny's Child. I was really into pop music as a kid. That was like my main focus, was just like the pop music that was coming out in that time. And then as I got a little bit older, once I hit like my teenage years, 13, 14, 15, I was very, very influenced by rock music. And that's when I started a band, actually. So I was in a band for like a couple of years.
I'm curious what 8-year-old Neomza's lyrics were. Do you remember any?
Oh my God. I was like in fake love or something. Like this is before my first kiss, before anything. So I was like, okay, all these songs are about love. So let me just pretend I'm in love with somebody and write about that.
Okay. So you mentioned by 13, you were already performing out there. And I guess maybe if this were like the 70s, 80s, it would be the story of you performed in a lot of clubs and you sort of got noticed. Nowadays, I guess the modern club is YouTube, where so many people record a lot of covers, and that's sort of how they get discovered. And
yeah,
a very big name who happened to come across your path, Mac Miller. How did you and Mac first meet up, and how did you end up signed on Remember, his independent label?
So after the whole like band stage that I was in, I decided that I wanted to have like a solo career. So for a year while I was in high school, I was kind of confused as to what route I wanted to go. So I figured I should do something that's going to get people's attention on me. And so I was like, let me start covering rap songs that people aren't really covering. So I looked up when Mac had dropped a mixtape called Best Day Ever, like a couple of days before I did this cover. And I looked it up and he had this song called I'll Be There. And he wrote it about his mom, and Mother's Day was coming up. So I was like, okay, this is perfect. And there was no covers of it yet. So I was like, let me cover this song, dedicate it to my mom, and whatever. It's like a 2-in-1 thing. Hopefully people see it. And literally by the next day, I had a couple of thousand views already. And I guess like one of his fan pages had posted it, and it got reblogged a bunch of times on Tumblr. And then he ended up seeing it the next day. And so he hit me up. Like his best friend had hit me up, told me to come to the show. I met him a week later at the Rave. He had a sold out show at the Rave, and I got guest listed for me to meet him. And after that, I just kept sending him demos of my original music because I was recording every now and then trying to get my own songs together. So I sent him this demo called Riding Solo at the time, which is the first song I released as a solo artist, like on my own before my deal with him. And he loved it. And so he was like, look, I want to like take you under my wing. I want you to be a part of Most Dope, which was his crew at the time. So I kind of became like, he kind of just like embraced me as a part of his crew. And then a couple years later, ended up signing me. But within those years, we grew together. He was helping me get studio time, you know, like was mentoring me. And yeah, by the time I was 20 years old, I did a deal with him.
Isn't that crazy how, I mean, the way the story just starts, you just put out a cover and a week later, you know, you're backstage, you're meeting the guy. And it, I mean, who could have thought that 1 week would go on to have so many years of friendship and relationships?
Oh, I remember it like it was yesterday. Like I can literally remember how excited I was. It was like a Sunday morning and I saw that like they had seen it and that I had like 4,000 views and I was like screaming around my house. So I was like, Mom, do you see this? Like, this is crazy. And then meeting him, like after being a fan and then it turning into a friendship and then it turning into him being my mentor. Like, yeah, it's like a whirlwind. It was absolutely insane. I still can't believe how it all happened to this day.
From Mac Miller, is that how you got to know Ariana Grande, segueing into two number one hits that you've written now in the Hot 100?
Yeah, actually, I met Ariana. We met briefly once when I was like 19 years old at one of my first times visiting LA. Like, she was hanging out with Mac. And then a couple of years later, obviously they started dating and we were around each other a lot more often. So yeah, that is how I met her. And then after he passed, she was in the studio, you know, just working on music and also just trying to get through everything that was going on. And, I was in New York and then we ended up linking up. She had me pull up to the studio and then it just turned into a really cool workflow and, just like a good space to release, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, on a personal level, that had to be a big loss for you, for someone who not only helped you get your start, but someone you got to know and got to bond with.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. It's definitely something I'm still kind of learning how to deal with and understand, but I just know that like he was meant to walk into my life and he is the reason for so many beautiful things that have happened to me since I've met him. So it was a meant to be kind of situation.
Thought I'd end up with Sean, but it wasn't a match. Wrote some songs about Ricky, now I listen and laugh. Even almost got married, and for Pete I'm so thankful.
Wish I could say thank you to Malcolm, 'cause he was an angel. One taught me love.
So it seems that the songs on the Thank You Next album sort of happened organically. Ariana had just released Sweetener, and pop stars aren't releasing album follow-ups as quickly as she has now done. So is that how it felt? Are these songs, having been in the co-writing sessions, I'd love to really, again, get inside your head of how specifically Thank You Next and Seven Rings were written. But did it sort of feel like these songs came from just a very natural, organic place?
They did, honestly. They really did. Each song was made, like, there was, like, a song a day happening. It was all about, like, we walk in, figure out, you know, like, how she was feeling that day, and then kind of base whatever we were writing about that. It was super, super fast, super organic, and just, like, a very natural experience. I mean, the album got finished within a couple weeks. Like, it was pretty crazy how fast it all happened.
So take us into the writing. Let's start with Thank You Next.
She was just having a really rough day that day. And I mean, she just had a lot of stuff going on in her personal life. We were just trying to lighten the load, I guess, a little bit, as everybody else in the studio. Like, so she came in that day and was obviously feeling some type of way about the status of her relationships and stuff. But we decided to look at it in a more positive way and make that song, you know, make it just like, rather than being bitter, be thankful for what you learn from each relationship. It just came out really fast. Like, it was just, it was like word vomit.
So, you know, while we're talking about sort of the overlap of Sweetener in this project, is this the first song of the Thank You Next project that really jump-started everything from, you know, I want to make a new album, I want it to be about this? Was this the really the moment where all of what we're seeing now began, or where in the process did this song come about?
I mean, yeah, the album ended up being called Thank You Next after we wrote that song. She was like, okay, the album's called Thank You Next. They were already working on songs prior to when I got there. So they had like a couple songs that they were like thinking about for the album and stuff. And then we made Thank You Next. I think that kind of like solidified the name of the project and really gave like the drive to finish the whole entire album.
So we always hear about collaborations when they're written this way with different writers. It sounds like it just sort of came about from what we've heard about other songs, that you were all kind of sitting around talking, in this case about how Ariana was dealing with things that day, and just that natural conversation that can lead to song lyrics.
Yeah, and you have so many powerful women in the room, and you know, so many talented people in the room with when it comes to the producers and the writers. And so I think it was just really, yeah, just flowing of conversation and ideas bouncing off of one another, you know. It was a very fluid experience.
Do you remember specifics when you hear the song now? Yep, that's my line. Or was it sort of just collaborative overall? Is there a part of that song that you really say, that's exactly what I contributed?
Yeah, it was pretty collaborative overall. Like, especially for that one, I would say it was collaborative overall.
Who came up with the at least the song is a smash line? I always chuckle when I hear that. It's such a meta line, and of course it turned into a smash. It was prophetic as well.
I don't really remember. I think it was Ariana that came up with that line, but I'm not exactly sure.
And if it's the same thing, the one taught me love, one taught me patience, which has become the meme, the most famous lyric. Any thoughts about how that came about?
Yeah. Again, it was just like a group. We were literally standing around a table, like throwing lines at each other. So it was kind of definitely a group effort.
And I'll ask you about Seven Rings in a moment. But from that process of writing the song, you're just all sitting around talking, becomes a song. What's it like when you see the song debuting at number one, be weeks at number one on the Hot 100, and that's Seven Rings, as an up-and-coming artist, to suddenly have the number one song in the country that you co-wrote? What does that feel like?
It's insane. I still really don't know how to process any of it. Yeah. Like I said, I was in a pretty dark space. So when I was writing and helping with these songs, or just whatever, contributing my part, it was just like a distraction for me at that time. Like, I was having a lot of fun in the studio, just kind of like being able to release and like not think about everything else that was happening in my life. So I just wasn't, I didn't have any expectations. So seeing it go from what it was in the studio to being so like worldwide and having the number one song in the country is pretty surreal. I'm still trying to learn how to process it. Like, this is like my first placement as a songwriter. I mean, I've always focused on my artistry and just being an artist on my own. So getting into these sessions and working as a songwriter and placing these two singles, it's just like, it's absolutely insane. And it's definitely a blessing.
It sounds like a lot of artists say that music really is a therapy when real life gets really tough. You can try to heal yourself or try to at least deal with some of the pain through music.
Yeah, that's the best part about it. What keeps me going every day.
Yeah. Breakfast at Tiffany's and bottles of bubbles. Girls with tattoos who like getting in trouble.
Yeah, so Seven Rings. How do you all go from sitting around a room talking about new pop songs and suddenly, hey, let's rework My Favorite Things?
I think Ariana loves like theater and Broadway, so I think that was just like a shoo-in. Like us using that melody, it was just like a no-brainer.
Wasn't there, I thought I saw a tweet that somebody mentioned, and it may have been you, but one of the writers, at least they, you got drunk at like Tiffany's or something. And then like, you just like left that night and started writing this song out. Is that true? How that got started? Did I make that tweet up?
Oh, no. She definitely, it was Ariana. She tweeted, that we went to Tiffany's and got really drunk off champagne. She ended up buying Seven Rings for everybody that was working on the project. And yeah, we left, got in an Uber got in her driver's car on the way back to the studio, and we had a bottle of champagne in the car, and I was like, hey, we need to write a song about this. Like, this is some boss shit. We got to go in and just kind of get this experience in song form. And you need to just like talk about today and the fact that you're a boss.
So it really is a true story. It's autobiographical. It's really happened.
Oh, yeah, it literally is. It's a very true story.
How does it feel to have written a song where you share a co-writing credit with Rodgers and Hammerstein?
So crazy. I would have never thought that would happen, honestly. That's something I did not expect happening in my life, but I'll take it.
Yeah. Does this get you all going back into the catalogs? I mean, a whole album of Oklahoma, other Sound of Music covers? Has this inspired that, or maybe more of a one-time thing?
I don't know if I'm definitely going to go that route, but I'm not opposed to it.
Okay, now one thing about this song, Seven Rings, it caused a lot of controversy around the songwriting itself. You know, there was the allegations from Soldier Boy, there was the allegation from Princess Nokia. When did you first learn about, you know, people having red flags about this song, and what's your response to either of them suggesting that, you know, you guys stole somebody's flow or aren't crediting somebody, or, you know, were overly influenced? What do you say to that when you hear that?
I said this before, and I think like in this day and age, it's really hard to do something without being criticized, like even if it's something good. But so I tried to, for me, it was just ignoring all that, kind of just because I know that like deep down, nobody was trying to steal anybody's flow. So I really think it just comes down to people trying to find something negative in almost everything nowadays.
The video as well. You're in the video. So not even just co-writing it.
I think it was a little less partial for me knowing it wasn't my video. So yeah. I was kind of just having fun in the background. I was enjoying myself. Again, not sound like an alcoholic, but we were also drinking champagne that day. So I was having a pretty good time.
There's a theme running through your songwriting.
I know. I feel like I need to stick to champagne. It's doing something good for me.
I was going
to
say, we're going to get a Moët, you know, sponsorship out of this for you, like after this podcast. Wow.
Wow, that'd be amazing. I'd love that.
Breathe.
Now we're moving into your own music. You've got the new EP out, Vacation, out on the legendary Motown label. And the single for the song Me and You is also out. How do you describe your sound to people who are going to hear you for the first time? We heard this song, you know, we had read that you said it kind of was a beachy song. I read somebody in the YouTube comments saying kind of had that Aaliyah kind of easygoing vibe to it. To me, it was kind of like, I guess the scene it kind of set was like a Sunday morning, like the light kind of like filtering in through the curtains. Like that was kind of the mood I got from it. But how would you describe it to people?
I think it's exactly how you described it. It's definitely that, like that comforting kind of like space. I wrote it as talking about having somebody be your vacation or you being somebody else's vacation and just being that safe space for somebody else or vice versa. So it definitely is that Sunday morning, sun peeking through your window kind of vibe for that single. And the whole project kind of is just like me going inward and realizing that I can be happy in these spaces and in these moments and not have to really worry about the future since it doesn't really exist yet.
I like that. Don't worry about the future. It doesn't exist yet.
Well, I mean, it's a nice counterpoint because I know now, you know, especially with the political climate, everybody's so anxious all the time, so worried about what's going to happen, you know, next year, 2020, this, you know, the earth's going to hell. It feels like we can just pause and enjoy what we have now, for real.
Right. There's a lot of things that we have that we can worry about. So it is nice to take a break and just enjoy the moment that you have right in front of you every now and then.
I think one of the small things that people may not realize, since you're on, you know, this release through Motown, what's it like for you to be associated now with such a historic label? I mean, we saw the tribute at the Grammys, 60 years of excellence. For you to be part of that family, what's that like?
Yeah, it's really, really crazy. It's I used to Google how to get signed. So being signed to such a legendary label is just honestly incredible and something I used to pray for every night, you know? So I feel blessed to be a part of something so legendary. You know, I'm just trying to live up to it.
And headline tour, they're playing Governor's Ball this year as well. This is feels like a big step forward for you in terms of live performing. I know you were saying a minute ago about maybe it's a little easier on the Seven Rings video because you weren't the main name out in front. But now being the headliner out on tour and in major cities, major shows like Governor's Ball.
Yeah, I'm definitely ready to get back on tour and just like meet my fans. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. So I think it's just like the perfect moment for me to go out now after releasing this project. I'm so excited for the Governor's Ball. I've been dying to play festivals. So I feel like I'm actually prepared, you know? I've been working for this my entire life. So I think it's about time that I'm out playing shows and really just getting out on the road.
Yeah, from talking before about your Albanian background and the resolve you said that people from that area have, it just kind of sounds like from talking to you that you really do seem grounded. You're taking the success in stride, and certainly you've had some losses personally to deal with. It kind of sounds like you've really got the right perspective about everything.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. I mean, it's just a... It really is a privilege to be able to do what I do, and I don't take any of it for granted, like, ever, not one second. Every day I'm thankful that I get to wake up, make music as my job, and reach people, like, all around the world with my music. It's something I hope I can do for the rest of my life.
First off, you mentioned Alicia Keys earlier as one of your early influences. As we noted, you were at the Women in Music event in Billboard. Gary and I were both there. Did you happen to meet Alicia by chance that night? She was there as well. Were you starstruck or what?
No, I didn't get to meet her, but I was starstruck just by watching her talk. I was like, oh my God, that's Alicia Keys. I am obsessed with her. So it was just cool to just be in the presence of her, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I assume a lot of people who didn't really know that side of Alicia really got to know her during her hosting at the Grammys. I mean, you know, what a great job she did just sort of setting the right tone for the evening. I mean, showing off so many of her musical talents and sort of where it may have been comedians doing skits and other parts. But I thought she really like held the show together just really, really nicely.
No, she did. She just is such a graceful person. And I think she moves with elegance. And and she's just so talented and also powerful. So yeah, I think she did a great job, and she's definitely an inspiration and someone to look up to as a female, as a woman.
And so I bring up Alicia because with Alicia and Christina, Destiny's Child, those were some of your earlier influences when you were growing up and really starting to get your foot into the door in terms of writing and singing. Who now are some of the artists who that you really enjoy? Have your tastes changed over the years? And who would you want to collaborate with or work with or learn from that's really popping today?
Someone currently, I'm really, really into The Weeknd. I love Frank Ocean. I think people like them live in their own spaces. I was a really, really big Amy Winehouse fan. I'm all about artists that just are like raw and uncut, are like 100% authentically themselves. I think there's a lot to learn from people like that. And I'm trying to be exactly that. I'm trying to just create my own sound, my own world that people can live in and identify with.
I mean, those are three of the best of the last decade. Yeah. And you're right. They all have that through line of, you know, obviously they have the commercial success, but they don't, you know, chase it or manufacture it. It's really something that resonates from within that just finds the right click and touches a lot of people.
Exactly.
All right. Well, congratulations on all your success so far, Neoms. It sounds like there's so much more ahead. Sounds like there's more reason for champagne ahead. Thank you for earning even more.
I'm virtually cheersing you guys right now.
Cheers back.
Thank you so much, Neomsa.
Thank you. My reality.
Cheers, Neomsa. Great having her as our guest, finding all about how these songs are written. So really appreciate that, having her on the podcast this week, and a perfect time with Ariana all over the top of the Hot 100.
Yeah, like I said, we'll look out for that Moët Chandon, you know, sponsorship coming through soon. All that champagne. We hear Charby Podcast love champagne too, so send us some this way.
All right, what are we wrapping up with, Trevor?
Okay, so I was thinking about what to end things on this week, and just last week found out and remembered that Anita Baker was actually in town in New York City performing a couple nights at Radio City Music Hall on her farewell tour. And I know a lot of artists put it out there that they're on the farewell tour and they, you know, do that last sweep and then somehow they never seem to retire. They're 3-4 years later back on the road. This one feels like it really might be the last one that we get from Miss Baker. So for those who don't know, really one of the great R&B jazz veterans, hugely popular in the late 1980s, early 1990s, multiple Grammy Award winner, was right up there competing at the top of the charts with Whitney and Natalie and so many of the others, and feels like, you know, in honor of her, I guess, potential last passing through New York, maybe we should close with one of Anita Baker's great hits.
I'm old enough to remember mm-hmm. when she was having a hit. So, yeah, Giving You the Best That I Got when I first got into music around 1988. That song was huge for the entire winter into 1989.
Is that the one that's closest to your heart, Gary?
Yeah, it's the first song I knew about her.
Oh, you missed Sweet Love and Caught Up in the Rapture? And
I got to know them afterwards.
But, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, okay. We'll close with the one that first crossed Gary Trust's radar back in that cold winter of 1988. Here it is, the one, the only Anita Baker and her 1988 smash, Giving You the Best That I Got.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more.
One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.